Put down that cheeseburger. Hide those fries. Ditch the Twinkies. It's time for Hooked on Raw
with author, investigative reporter, activist, and raw food enthusiast, Rio.
Hi, this is Rio, and you're listening to Hooked on Raw on RawEnergyRadio.com. This show is about healthy living, primarily through the raw and living food diet and lifestyle, and other natural approaches to good health. If you're not familiar with the raw food diet, it means eating foods as nature creates them for us, organic, whole, and unheated. This is the diet that every other species on the planet adheres to, except humans and their domesticated animals. We are children of biology, not technology, and it is through understanding our biology that we can fulfill our greatest health potential. So join us as we explore how we can get and stay healthy by getting back to our roots in nature. My co-host today is Lee Creasel.
I am right here with you in the studio.
Yes, the farm studio.
The farm studio.
That we finally got together.
Well, let's see. I don't hear any chickens. I only hear the plants moving in the wind.
You hear plants moving?
Well, I hear things all the time.
Today we have a very special guest. It's Dr. Karina Lopez. She's a naturopathic doctor. She started her schooling in Western medicine, allopathic school.
Does that mean Texas?
No. Then what she did is she switched to homeopathy and naturopathic medicine, and she's also an acupuncturist, and she does iridology, which is reading the weaknesses in your body through the iris of the eyes. So she's a very interesting lady that we're going to interview shortly. But first, we want to tell you...
My little tidbit?
Well, it's our tidbit today.
Our tidbit, right. Because for your birthday, I took you to a fancy restaurant.
Yes, and it was a very special event because for 2 years in New York, the unvaccinated could not go into restaurants. And even now, in some restaurants, they're not allowed.
We were banned.
This restaurant is vegan, but not raw.
But you always come up with raw recipes. You have ideas from what you have there.
The reason that I like to go there and savor their wonderful, exquisite vegan cuisine is because they are masters of the sauce. So you'll read on the menu something or other with kohlrabi sauce. Well, who is going to get excited about kohlrabi sauce? I don't think anybody gets excited about kohlrabi sauce, but you try it, and it's just out of this world.
Well, there's one thing about this restaurant, though.
Yes, one little thing.
Oh,
before we tell what that one little thing is, I just want to say that I love this restaurant. It's not a put-down of the restaurant at all. It's just our perception of how the restaurant is.
Well, you took me, I guess a few years ago, or before COVID, you took me there for my birthday.
Yes.
Yes. You were there, I was there, and our son Sean was there. And the way they did the food was they served you your dish, and then we were waiting, and then Sean got his dish. Hey, I'm the guy whose birthday it is, right? And fine, then... Finally, they served me mine, and it's by reservation, so if you're going to be there from 6 to 7 or whatever it is, they expect you pretty much to be through.
But I think they discarded that.
Yeah, they discarded.
Now, the last time we stayed all we wanted.
Yeah, they discarded that, but unfortunately, on my birthday, it was like, how fast are you going to eat? And the whole thing is, it's nouveau cuisine.
No, you know what I think it is, Lee? I think... that we didn't understand when we first went there, that it's more of, rather than You go for dinner where, you know, you have maybe super salad first, then you have your main dish, then you have your dessert or something like that. This is what they call a tasting menu. So they bring these little tiny plates, and they put in front of you empty plates. And then they bring the courses, and so you're meant to share everything. And I think that's what happened the first time we went. We didn't know, you know, that it was meant to be shared like that.
I still don't know.
So like you were saying, Nouveau
cuisine. In other words, as they say, just enough to make you mad.
It ended up that it took us 3 entrees each to sort of get semi-full. And then when we went home, we had a snack.
Well, I prepare myself usually when I go to that restaurant. I either eat dinner before or I say, where are we going to go for dinner after?
But I'll tell you.
No, it's really great.
I'll tell you, the vegetables that they serve there, and they'll serve vegetables that are unusual, like kohlrabi and, you know, Brussels sprouts and just different vegetables
And hen of the woods.
And hen of the woods is, oh my God.
Don't have to kill any chickens, because this tastes as close to a chicken as you're going to get if you want something that's the taste of a chicken.
Yes, but is it hen? Yeah, no, it's
hen
not
of the
hen.
Wood. Oh, chicken
no,
of the woods.
No, it's chicken. It's chicken mushroom, not hen of the woods. Hen of the woods is another mushroom. But the one that tastes like chicken is called chicken mushroom.
Right, but what they had was hen of the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that was good. Except, did I have it last time? Oh, yes,
yes
we did. We had 3 servings of that.
How soon we forget.
We had 3 servings each, 9 entrees for 3 people.
I won't tell you what the bill came to.
Well, it's reasonably priced if you get one dish.
Yes, but the one dish is the size of one of those little stoppers you put in the sink.
Okay, you're exaggerating now.
I am.
But let me tell you, I do recommend going there at least once. It's called the Avant Garden. It's in the East Village?
The East Village in New York City.
What street is it on?
I believe it's on
7th Street.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And it's on the south side of the street. If you want to get some unusual flavors, that is what they're well known for, these very unusual sauces that they do. It's just incredible. I mean, yeah. I'm looking forward to my next visit once a year.
Yeah, you come out of there, you're sauced.
My co-host today is Lee Creazo.
We're here, I am here, and it's an exciting show with Dr. Karina Lopez.
That's right. Our guest today is Dr. Karina Lopez, a naturopathic doctor, an herbalist, acupuncturist, and homeopath, among other modalities that she uses to help her patients. And this is the same Karina that came to help me all those years ago, as we outlined in our first show. This is our second show with Dr. Karina. Dr. Karina, you had mentioned in the break that at the Albert Einstein School, you had the opportunity to visit Belize. Tell us about that visit and how you learned about their traditional medicine, even though you were studying allopathic medicine at the time.
I'll tell you, it was a really special opportunity that Albert Einstein had given students between their first and second year to go abroad and to, you know, intern and help out in impoverished countries, et cetera, et cetera. So I went to an English-speaking country in Belize, and what was really interesting is I was interning at a hospital and helping with the physicians there, and guess who the physicians were? They were the Cuban physicians, and they couldn't speak English because they're Spanish-speaking. So I'm in Latin America in an English-speaking country helping really to translate for the physicians and help them with, you know, whatever they needed as I, you know, was interning. Now, I remember seeing something remarkably similar to what I saw in my own community, in Yonkers and in the Bronx. And it has to do with poverty. It has to do with access to healthcare. And I saw this woman in quite an enormous line with her daughter. She was a blind woman. She was young. She was about, 40-something. And her daughter says, "Mommy, here's your breakfast." And she hands her mommy a donut. Well, mommy was blind and was a severe diabetic. And I came up to her and I said, "Excuse me, ma'am, do you know that, sugar's not good for you right now?" And she goes, "No one told me that. I came for my once-a-month insulin shot." And I was flabbergasted. First, insulin shots are supposed to be daily. Nonetheless, no one told you about sugar. And that kind of made me crazy because I thought about the communities where I am in, where you see these very well-meaning moms buying these little, quarter waters for their children, which are the kind of Gatorades and the high C's, and taking them to McDonald's and spending their money on these processed breakfasts, which we know is just as much nutrition as starvation is. I mean, it's a better have rock soup than that. I mean, at least you'd get the dirt and the nutrients from that. I mean, it's really sad. And these people were suffering, and they were looking up to Western society. So I went out and I said, let me find the healers. And I found this woman, Beatrice Waite, who's a Mayan abdominal healer. She's since passed, God bless her soul. And she showed me the wonders of some vegetables and what some fruits and herbs can do. And she showed me okra. And she said, "Okra, well, that can help with the gut and inflammation and that burning sensation," which she means potentially H. pylori or acid reflux or any type of intestinal ulcers. And also it helps with the ovaries, and it helps with regulation of the menstrual cycle. And you want to have 7 okras before your menstrual period starts. And she started teaching me all these little things about the okra. And I realized, wait a minute, vegetables have more than one use. It's not like a pill, take this for that. Oh no, you take an okra and you can help with your menstrual cycle, you can help with your gut, you can help with so many different things. So I was so proud and excited, I grabbed okra and I grabbed a little basket, and the very next day I went on that line and I was talking about okra. And I remember someone came up to me and said, "Why are you carrying this?" And I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, you have amazing things in America that can just help, like these amazing pills and all these drugs that can help everything. Why do you carry a silly okra? We had that everywhere." And I said, "Well, that's the thing you don't realize. We wish we had okra, but instead we have these toxic drugs that are hurting us, and you have the miracle cure right in your backyard."
What did she respond?
She was kind of stunned, and a lot of people felt that way. But I feel that because I was an American and I was parading with their items, their vegetables, their fruits, it brought back some pride. And I realized how brainwashing the West is, that they take away the very beautiful, healing, and nourishing aspects of someone's culture and bring in their garbage.
We are brainwashed. I mean,
and we ourselves are brainwashed,
yeah,
right?
I mean, turn on TV and it says the world runs on Dunkin'.
And the formaldehyde decaf, right?
Yeah, and right here in our neighborhood where we are in Harlem, there's a Dunkin' Donuts just a block or so away, and when it's time for kids to go to school in the morning, if you pass by, you can see the line out the door, and mothers with their kids, instead of making them a healthy breakfast, or they just don't have the knowledge about a healthy breakfast, or don't have the money for a healthy breakfast. Of course, Dunkin' is not cheap either, but the kids are taking for breakfast jelly donuts, glazed donuts, and coffee.
Right. I mean,
that
was part of what I did. I remember going to school and grabbing a glazed donut when I was in high school. And, you don't get that education. What happened to the health courses in school? What happened to, cooking in the school and learning, the home economics courses? And so these very basics are not being given. And instead,
what we see are commercials about how healthy Dunkin' is, or how they've revamped McDonald's recently. And, you know, now I remember I had a friend of mine, you know, from when, you know, we went to elementary school, and she said, "Well, Karina, you haven't seen McDonald's now. They've introduced some really healthy meals, and now they're cooking with real meat." And I said,
"What were they cooking with before?"
Right. And so, you know, here's the power of propaganda. And so it's really interesting to see our education and our ability to be manipulated. And that is something that with education, through empowerment, we bring back to people. We bring back their ancestral traditions. We bring back the pride in their roots. And that's the most important thing, not to feed on these manufactured goods.
Not everything modern is the best.
Right.
I know some countries aspire to what we have. You know, we have the best of everything, supposedly. But they really have the best of everything when they go back to their traditional diets. Like, for example, I read about in Hawaii. In Hawaii, when they go back to their traditional diets, they don't have all the overweight that they have now from using processed foods in Hawaii. But I want to remind our listeners that we did a first show with Dr. Karina, and I encourage you to go back and listen to that first show so you can get some background on how she became a naturopathic doctor and interested in natural ways of healing. And I want to continue with Dr. Karina as part of her education, how she went to different parts of the world to learn about traditional healing. So you learned so much in Belize, and then you had the opportunity to go to India. Tell us about that.
The India trip was really interesting. I remember when I graduated naturopathic college, a girlfriend at the time, you know, she said, "Hey, Karina, what are you doing next?" And I said, "I'm going to go to India. I've got me a mentor." And she looked at me and she started laughing. Here my friend was laughing. And she said, "You don't even know anyone from India." And I said, "But I will." And I have to tell you, it's really actually that type of thinking really came from you, Rio. I mean, I remember I had the audacity to call you and I was speaking to you and you said, "You know, Karina, your words, they're a little bit on the opposite side of positive." And she gifted me, you, Rio, gifted me with the secret. And you changed my life in terms of thinking about things in a positive way. And I said, fast forward, here I am, I'm going to go to India. And let me tell you, within 2 years, I met a man, Robert Street, and he showed me this presentation of his clients in India, and he had seen 250,000 people in a free clinic in India giving free homeopathic remedies at the Mayurbhanj homeopathic dispensary, which was open for I think over 100 years at this point, and just a very special place. And I had the honor to go visit him in India and see 1,000 people myself. And I'll tell you, in India, you can see the real miracles with homeopathy. And part of the reason is people are eating so healthy, especially the farmers. You know, although it's a free homeopathic clinic, you have people who are quite rich who come because it works. Homeopathy works. And it is a beautiful medicine, a cheap medicine, which, of course, don't make the pharmaceutical companies happy.
Can you give us a postage stamp description of what homeopathy is? We have 2 minutes till break.
Okay, here's a postage stamp. So it is the philosophy like cures like, all right? So let's say you are crying, and your tears are burning. So what causes tears to burn? Maybe if you're chopping onions. And so, guess what? Perhaps some onions diluted using that vibration of the onions are going to help someone who has
burning eyes with perhaps some sinusitis. So essentially, you had these provers, these people who were given diluted versions of said poisons, let's say an onion that can cause, you know, burning eyes. And so they would juice the onion, then they would dilute it with water, then they would shake it and keep diluting it and keep shaking it till we get the vibration.
So in essence, you're not getting the physical onion anymore because of the dilution, but the vibration
is still there. And the idea is that like cures like. One vibration will knock out another. And so I'll tell you, there are some profound aspects to this.
Okay, I want to go to a break now, but we'll continue with that
Sounds good. When we come back.
You've been listening to Hooked on Raw on nytalkradio.net. Stay with us for more exciting and interesting information from Dr. Karina Lopez. Welcome back. You've been listening to Hooked on Raw on nytalkradio.net. My co-host is Lee Crizo.
I am here, and also I'm going to announce that the show very soon will be heard on longevityradio.com.
Okay.
We're growing.
We are. And our guest today is Dr. Karina Lopez, a naturopathic doctor, an herbalist, acupuncturist, and homeopath, and still learning because she's searching other modalities. And one of the modalities that she is getting into now is how your emotions affect your health. Tell us a little about that.
Oh my goodness. This is something that has been part of my training for many, many years. And it's incredible. You know, the ancients always connected the organs to emotions. Even the Taoist healers would use vibrations to help with emotions, to help with the organs. There are massages. I mean, it is incredible. So let's even talk about the clock. Do you know that in Chinese medicine, every hour of the day relates to an organ? Now, the liver is between 1 and 3. And if somebody...
In the day or in the...
Oh, in the evening. So if someone gets up between the hours of 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., really, their liver and gallbladder could be overacting. But what that can also mean is that they're really angry about certain things happening. And their body can't relax. And they wake up during that time. And so if we nourish the liver and nourish those feelings of anger, we can help the person tremendously. And you can do that through meditations. You can do that through herbs. You can do that through baths. You can do that through massage. And there's ways to do self-massage. And that's part of what I do with people is teach them how to massage their bodies, how to use certain oils, how to eat certain foods, how to use the homeopathic remedies, how to use the herbs. Because it's all dynamic and fluid, and all of it really is necessary. We have to touch ourselves. We have to eat correctly, and we have to nourish our spirits.
Dr. Karina, you also went to your homeland, which was Puerto Rico, and you went to the Ann Wigmore Natural Health Institute there. Tell us about your visit there.
Well, I have to thank Rio for that, because Rio gave me a scholarship when I graduated naturopathic college. And that was the most incredible opportunity I ever had in my life. You got to see people who were really suffering. They had cancer. They had tremendous pathology, illnesses, and they went in and they detoxed. And during these detoxes, People get angry because the liver is cleaning out. People get sad because of the lungs clearing out. People feel all sorts of emotions that they have to contend with. So there you have people in a beautiful setting, including myself, looking at the sea, appreciating nature, but also doing serious work to heal their bodies, mind and body. And it was such a special opportunity.
Tell us about what you learned in Greece.
Oh my goodness, I had the privilege to study with an alternate Nobel laureate, George Vithoulkis. He is in his 90s, I believe, and is sharp as a whip.
George
Vithoulkis.
Vithoulkis.
And he won the alternate Nobel Prize. And he has done enormous work in the field of homeopathy. And I remember I went for a week, and at the end, someone came up to me, a man named Manfred, and he said, "We want you to stay for a few months." And I said, "Okay." And I stood there for a few months, and I saw case after case of serious pathology really, really helped with homeopathy. And you know, you see people with diseases that are told are incurable. But when you understand them mentally and physically and you bring the right vibration to the table with the remedy, you see transformation. And you know, homeopathy is actually, the American Institute of Homeopathy predates the American Medical Association. Homeopathy started with physicians. In fact, Rockefeller Sr. had his own private homeopath, and while his son was destroying all the homeopathic schools and ending them because they found out that petroleum can be used in medicine, and boy, that's a lot more expensive, they shut down the homeopaths because their medicine was inexpensive. But guess what? Sr. Rockefeller never gave up on his homeopathic physician.
But only for himself, unfortunately.
But only for himself. Well, there you have greed, right? Maybe he had needed a nice remedy for that that was overlooked. Who knows?
Is there a Bach remedy for greed?
Oh, there sure is. And there's many, many remedies. But I think he probably needed a few more remedies. I think we had to throw the homeopathic bucket at him. But
He threw the homeopaths under the train.
He sure did. And and it was kind of interesting. You know, he's quoted as, you know, people being embarrassed. Like, here you are ending the schools and you still have a homeopath? What's that about? You know, how are you going to show for that? And he just didn't care. And, you know, it all came down to that. There's a lot of that historically that we can talk about, you know, how homeopathy ended. But I will tell you this. The people who kept the tradition alive were the women. The women needed it for their children. How many earaches, how many pneumonias, how many different sore throats, mumps, measles helped with homeopathy? The mothers are what kept it alive because they knew that it was true. And that's how the legacy continued today. And so it's in the people's hands. You don't have to be a fancy physician to learn homeopathy. You just have to be someone who cares and loves and wants to help.
And it's very, very cheap.
Very cheap.
I mean, you can take like one onion and make probably enough remedies for 1,000 years.
I think so.
don't tell that to Dr. Fauci.
Oh, yeah, that's that's not something we would have to share.
Well, you mentioned greed, so.
But I think they know, which is why we're not really helped by the system. And, you know, in COVID time, you know, the last epidemic, New York actually had the finest of homeopathic doctors helping with the pandemic. And the people who were saved had their homeopaths.
Are you talking about 1918?
I sure am.
Okay, yeah, that's about the time when the Rockefellers and the Carnegies abolished other kind of modality for treatments that there could be.
That's correct.
And replaced it with chemical.
That's correct. And so drug. It's unfortunate that so many, are unable to be helped that could be helped.
People have bought into the allopathic medical system as some wonder. And, I do have to give it credit. I mean, it has its place. It has its place.
For surgeries, absolutely.
For surgeries, for accidents, for broken bones, for,
Although, if I had, knock on wood, a broken bone, I'd love to see a healer who does bone setting.
Interesting.
I think that there are amazing emergency resources that are not acknowledged for burns, for bone breaks, healing stitches. I mean, it's incredible the resources that we have from our elders that are not given the respect that they need. We're in a society where youth is considered the best thing. Oh, look like you're 20 years old, have no hair on your body as a woman. It's so deplorable when we should be honoring the women who are the grandmothers, that ancient, beautiful, mythological Hecate figure who is the wise woman. That's who we should be worshiping.
I'm not familiar with Hecate.
So let's talk about it. So Persephone, Demeter, and Hecate are considered the three mythological women, the goddesses in Greece. Persephone has a story where she was with her mother, Ceres, Demeter, however you may call her. And her mother was Demeter, was the goddess of the harvest. And she made the lands beautiful. And Persephone was by her side, a little baby girl running around. Then one day, Persephone trailed off. And underneath was who? Underneath was Pluto. Underneath was the god who was going to take her under the ground. And so Hades. So he took her right under the ground. And there he raped her. The rape of Persephone. And Demeter was hearing the screams, looking for her daughter. Where is my daughter? So she calls up and she finds Hermes, who's the god that goes between. And he says, Hades has taken your daughter. And that's her. She says, my brother took my daughter? Yes. And he wants to marry her and keep her. She says, no, bring him back. So they ask Zeus. And Zeus says you could bring Persephone as long as she didn't eat anything underground. But she did. She had 7 pomegranate seeds. So they said, well, she's going to have to stay 7 months out of the year. So Persephone was there and Demeter was so sad that the earth died. And that's why we're said to have winters. Because that's when things go down. And we are able to experience our emotions. And that's why when we go into the fall, that's the time of the lungs, when we experience grief. And the kidneys, when we experience fear, is the winter. So these emotions came, and Persephone was under. And then, Persephone, it was time for her to leave. But she had a baby now. And she went through a tremendous ordeal. And on her way out of the cave, she sees Medusa. And Medusa, if you look at Medusa, you're supposed to turn into stone. And Persephone looked at Medusa and said, honey, I've been through it all, baby. I can't go through stone looking at you. You don't fear me. You don't make me scared at all. And so she went and she said hi to Medusa. And there at the entrance was Hecate, the wise woman, who said, now, Persephone, you are no longer a child. You are now a grown woman. And she meets her mother as a grown woman, and she leaves knowing that one day she's going to be a wise elder, which is Hecate, the elder.
So interesting.
It is, because these myths, they teach us about transformation. They teach us about our own inner growth. They teach us about so much of our, of just life. And of course, during that time in Greece, you know, there was a lot of rape that occurred. So women had to create these stories to handle it. And it's very different from Isis. Isis in Egypt, she decided on her own to go to the underworld. She made the choice, versus Persephone was dragged. So depending on the civilizations, depends on the myth. But no matter what, we need to go into the depths of ourselves. We have to go into the cave to find our transcendence, right? And that's part of life. We have to go where it's difficult. We have to go where we're afraid. We need the courage to really, truly live the life that we want.
And on that note, we're going to take a short break and come back with our final segment with Dr. Karina Lopez. You've been listening to Hooked on Raw on nytalkradio.net. Stay with us. Welcome back. You've been listening to Hooked on Raw on nytalkradio.net. My co-host is Lee Criso.
Right here.
And our fabulous guest today is Dr. Karina Lopez, a naturopathic doctor, an herbalist, acupuncturist, homeopath, and who knows what else?
Dishwasher.
That's for sure.
She just told us some of the myths that she learned in Greece and how we can, through those myths, we can try to face some of our fears and come out of our fears into the life that we want. But Dr. Karina, tell us some of the other places that you visited to get your education, because as you said to us before, the school that you, the naturopathic school that you went to, was like the basics. You learned all the basics. But then you went out into the world to learn actually how to heal with different modalities. So tell us about your trip to Sweden, let's say.
Ah, Sweden, we went and we found a woman who is a beautiful alchemist, Lisa Jenin. And she is so special because her art is the art of spagyria. Spagyria is taking a plant or a metal or whatever and transforming it to make a beautiful healing tool, whether it be medicine or whatever. Remember, the ancient alchemists wanted to turn things into gold. But really, it's about making something and creating the spirit of it and allowing the spirit to transform in the medicine. So how do you do that? What you do is a process of tincturing, which is when you put the alcohol and the herb together. Then there's a process of waiting and then burning the mark, which is the herbal part. Then there's a part of really cleaning out the ashes and turning them into white crystals. Then there's a part of adding back the tincture and the essential oil back into the plant. So what does that mean? You see, when you do spagyria, when you're a maker of these medicines, you're actually transforming yourself. So first, you dilute yourself. You add the alcohol in. Then you take it apart and you get your bare self, that mark, that plant substance, and you burn it. You burn away all that doesn't suit you. And then you wait as you burn it for the ashes to turn pure white so that you find within yourself your own purity. And then you recombine it with the liquids. So you bring your back, yourself back to yourself, and you replenish yourself. You see, in making an herb or medicine or even making a meal, you have to transcend yourself on some level. I'll give you a great example of that. It's a love story, actually. I remember I was looking for the right mate, the right person in my life before I met my husband. And I was in a relationship, and this person had a very, very messy room. I'm talking about he had two rooms. One was the nice room, and one was the room where he kept all his stuff. And that stuff was old food and bugs and terrible stuff. He was quite rich and he had a mansion, so it was easy for him to have a sad room. Well, one day I said, we're going to change that. And that day was on Christmas Eve. And I said, we're going to do this no longer. We're going to clean this room. And we did. Masks on, gloves on, aprons on, and all. And can I tell you something? I felt like I was transforming myself, because through cleaning up and helping his grief, I cleaned up my own inner grief. And after that, we left each other, and I found the love of my life within the next month. And I attribute that to helping someone and helping myself. And that's what creations are. You can transform your life with the simplest of things. And that's why not purchasing food, but making your food is so important. And that's why really fermenting those things, those relationships with food, with love, that is your own inner alchemical work. And that's part of what I learned in Sweden.
So spagyria.
Spagyria. It's an ancient way of making medicine.
And can you make that medicine not with alcohol, but with fermentation also?
You do need the alcohol.
You need the alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's okay. Maybe there's ways, but, you know, you have to make a tincture. But I'm sure there's different ways, but part of it is also fermentation. So you're actually fermenting as well. There's so many ways to do it, and it's an ancient process. And my husband, Saki Stamu, now he's the person you want to talk to about those details.
Okay, maybe he's our maker. He's next on the interview
list. I should hope so.
So tell us about your trip to the Aqua Sesame.
Aqua Sesame.
That's here in the United States.
That's here upstate New York, way far, right at the borderline of New York and Canada. And that's the reservation. My good friend Alicia Cook, a very special, special soul to me. She actually teaches the children on the reservation their ancient, indigenous, Native American language. And she is so filled with this pride to bring back her language with her people, as so much of it is forgotten, along with the traditions. So I went with Alicia, and we went and we explored the terrain. And something very simple that I'd like to bring from this trip, aside from helping the people we helped and the people we saw, was the offering. You see, the Native American Indians, before they take any plant or anything that they need to help someone, they offer some tobacco. So they'll throw a little tobacco on the floor next to the plant, and they give a prayer. And that prayer is also for the people that they'll help, where they ask the plant, the rock, whatever, if it would help them to help the people. And there's so much respect in that, because you're asking nature to be present with you, and you're respecting the spirit of nature. So anytime we went out and collected, we were able to be still, be present, thankful, and ask for help. And that was a beautiful take home. And it reminded me of my work with Dr. Dawa, whose uncle is the physician to the Dalai Lama. Dr. Dawa is so special, and he taught me that all medicines are made with prayers. These Tibetan prayers to the medicine Buddha or to Tara, the other mythological deities, religious figures that they have. and these beautiful ancient prayers done on the medicine, because that's what the vibration is. You see, homeopathy is about vibration, but you want to bring your medicine alive with the incantations of religious rites or prayers or thoughts or wishes. Everything is connected. And so that was a beautiful piece of Aqua Sesame for me.
Wow. How long were you there?
We weren't there long. We were there a few weeks. And we continue our relationship with Alicia for a number of years, where we teach each other, help each other. She comes and visits us. We come and visit them. And, you know, it's really interesting how culturally a lot of what she is given is, you know, a lot of her presentations are suppressed. You know, they use animal medicine, and they're so respectful with it. And I remember she had to do a presentation, and she came to visit us in New York, and she said, well, I use bear fat for my medicine, and I use skunk oil. And at the center that I was given to speak at, they told me they don't want any animal products. And I don't know what to do because I only use animal products for my salves. It was this dichotomy where culture meets, you know, another culture and the expectations we have. And so I was open and listened to the fact that she now went to a place that was suppressing a majority of her teachings. And so there's a lot of that.
How did she handle that? Did she just teach a part of her teachings?
Yeah, she just did it with olive oil, but she said it won't work as well. It just won't. And that, and those people didn't learn the truth of what she does. And so I think that respectfully, we have to honor what people's traditions are for thousands of years and what they did without saying, well, no, you can't do that.
And let them evolve on their own if they want to.
Exactly. And respect and allow them to have their culture.
I have a similar situation where I was doing a presentation. I did not understand completely that it was completely vegan.
You bad.
I was bad.
You got punished.
And I brought honey into the situation. which is one of our exceptions. Practically, the bee products is,
well,
you know,
bees
an exception.
Are special, and we need them in
our
world.
We need them. We need them, and they create so many products. And if a beekeeper treats his bees well,
that's right.
Which you know from
my brother-in-law, who has an amazing beehives in Greece, where we get our,
and that
our
is,
honey.
And that is what I want to learn from him when I go to Greece.
Oh, you will. And we've got to make sure you get your honey, by the way, which we have for you.
Oh, thank you.
Make sure we mail that out.
Well, yeah, I got my comeuppance there. Yeah. And they crucified me. But, you know, vegans, one of the things they don't understand is that you cannot be completely vegan, because you would never watch a movie. I mean, there's animal products in so many common things. Movies, film.
Computers.
Computers have animal products in them. I agree that what we should do is try to find substitutes for these products. But how can you be a self-righteous vegan when there's no way a vegan can avoid these products?
I think it's all about respect. I think we have to respect the traditions, but also respect the animals. And that's why in Aqua Sesame, the amount of love and nurturing they gave, even with the sacrifice, if they had to kill a bear, they would use every part of it, and prayers and love and respect would be given. Now, their animals are so cheap. You can buy a chicken burger for, I don't know, $1 or whatever it is. And because it's so cheap, they mistreat them so much. And you're eating the sadness and the grief and the pain from this animal versus having a healthy animal that was nourished and loved. And yes, at the end was sacrificed, but in a way that was given respect, not abused and tortured. And I think that's where the difference lies. When we think about cultures that do use meat, we have to honor the ancient ways from which they did it, which garnered respect and honor, and not this horrible malpractice that's going on now.
Also, like fishermen, when they catch, let's say they're out to catch a certain type of fish,
right,
but in their nets they catch all kinds of other things, and those things die as well. So
it's unfortunate.
They don't fish in a way that is sustainable
or responsible
for the earth and for the seas.
You know, my mentor, and he died before I ever met him, but I call him my mentor anyway, because I went to the School of Natural Healing under Dr. Christopher. And through that school of herbalism, I learned an incredible amount. And Dr. Christopher always said, never pick an herb unless you've seen it in three patches in three different areas. So if you're on a walk, you have to see it three times. And never rape a field. You only take enough for what you need and enough to leave there. And that is something that we honor, because you have to honor practices that give back to the earth. Because we're in such a taking society, right? Like Black Friday, let's take everything, you know, trample everyone to get what we want.
On sale.
On sale.
We have to.
And so we have to honor our needs by relaxing and balancing and respecting.
And cultures have a right to develop on their own. In other words, there is a culture of veganism. That's fine. And so it's an ongoing development. Vegans have to realize that they can't be 100% vegan. It's just not possible in the world as it is today. And other cultures, if they want to change what they have traditionally done, they'll come to that on their own.
That's right.
Well, I want to just thank you so much, Dr.
Carolina Lopez. I love you so much. Rio, you saved my life. I love you with all of my heart.
Ditto, 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 ditto.
On that note, give your website.
Yes, your website.
Vitalist Healing Traditions, VITALIST, healingtraditions.com, vitalisthealingtraditions.com.
And Dr. Carina will treat you from Greece by Zoom or other app that's applicable.
We have a nice Jane app, and it's beautiful because we can empower, help you, and make sure you get all your health needs.
So she does acupuncture.
Well, not electronically, but,
No.
But I certainly help people find their points so that they can massage them and use different points.
Well, didn't acupuncture come from acupressure originally?
Actually, acupuncture came from trying to kill evil spirits. And so what the ancients would do is when there was something negative, let's say a pandemic, for example, you would see the ancients stabbing swords in the air to kill spirits that were evil. And that transcended to needles.
Boy,
on
do
the body.
We need that today. Anyway, I want to just say all the things that Dr. Carina Lopez can help you with as a naturopathic doctor. She's an herbalist, she's a homeopath, and she does iridology. Oh, that's one thing we didn't get into, but anyway, there'll be more shows.
There's so much to talk about, and
thank you.
That's the beauty.
Thank you, Dr. Carina Lopez, for being with us. VitalistHealingTraditions.com. You've been listening to Hooked on Raw on nytalkradio.net. We thank you for being with us today. And until the next time, stay in tune with nature, and you'll be in tune with yourself.